Season 3 of the Deeper Blue podcast is brought to you by Suunto. Finnish engineering, piloting adventure from mountaintop to ocean floor since 1936. Suunto.
Welcome to the Deeper Blue podcast, your weekly guide to everything that's happening around the world underwater. My name is Megan Haney Greer. I'm a freediver, ocean explorer, and the imperfect conservationist. Also, co-host of the Deeper Blue podcast, the podcast for deeperblue.com, the world's most popular diving website. Every week, the Deeper Blue podcast covers everything that is happening in the scuba, freediving, dive travel, and ocean advocacy world. So join us as we explore the deeper blue.
Welcome back to the Deep Blue podcast, everyone. Hey, Lyndon.
Hey, Stephen.
This is Lyndon. This is the last episode of season 3.
Well, holy sea cow.
Holy sea cow, mermaids.
Yes, we should really celebrate in some way, shouldn't we?
So joining me, I'm Stephen Whelan. I'm the host of the podcast and founder of deeperblue.com and Mermaid Lyndon.
I'm Mermaid Lyndon. Hey, sea fans, let's talk news.
Ah, I like it. A bit of Mermaid Minute. Those of you that don't know, Lyndon has a fantastic children's web series on YouTube. You can hear her say, hey, sea fans. My kids are obsessed with it, to be honest.
And I'm obsessed with your kids, so it's perfect.
So listen, Lyndon, should we get on with the news for this week? Should we go and have a look at some of the diving news and travel news for the world?
As a matter of fact, I think that segueing from a YouTube series into a TV series bit of news. It was a segue right into this Dive Club TV. It's a new Netflix series that's out of Australia, and it is a scripted series that features a bunch of sprightly teenagers who are of the diving persuasion, who I imagine get into all sorts of shenanigans above and under the waves.
So Maddie, Lauren, Anna, and Stevie apparently are the names of the characters, and they navigate life, friendship and romance above the waves and then below the waves. They're also skilled divers. But this is great because it's obviously introducing diving to very, you know, tween and teenage audience, which is absolutely fantastic. More people we get interested in diving in the underwater world is fantastic. Although I didn't probably introduce my kids to this because it'll be just yet another. I mean, there's a lot of mermaid-y type stuff that they watch in addition to Mermaid Minute. There's lots of Mako mermaids.
Well, that's the thing. All of the really good kind of tween shows that are ocean themed or water related, mermaid or dive related, have mostly been out of Australia. So I have to commend the Australian television and film world for really embracing the aquatic environment and putting it in the forefront of their media. I mean, there was one back in the 90s called Ocean Girl that was so cool, and then H2O Just Add Water, and then the spinoff of Mako Mermaids. And now we have Dive Club. So bravo. I love this. This is great for our industry.
So let's segue a little bit to some ocean conservation. You've heard us talk a little bit before about how endangered a lot of species in the oceans are, and it's usually a lot of bad news. But whilst the latest World Conservation Congress in Marseille in France was reporting a lot about sharks, they did have a bit of good news, which is fantastic. Apparently, tuna population numbers are significantly up, and conservation efforts are putting the global population on, and I quote, on the path to recovery. Which is fantastic. I think this is really great. Yeah, it's such a great thing to be able to give some good news about stocks of fish in the oceans.
Yeah, it is. And on the flip side of this, while it's so exciting, it makes me want to also put that caveat out there of this doesn't mean you should run out and eat a ton of tuna now. Let's let this positive trajectory keep going and let it get ahead of itself so that we can create sustainability again. You know, they're talking about the Atlantic bluefin tuna has moved from endangered to least concern. Albacore and yellowfin have been downgraded from near threatened to least concern, which is amazing to me, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, you're right. Don't completely rush out to your local sushi restaurant and order a whole bunch of stuff. That's probably not the right thing to do. But I'm dead chuffed that this is happening. So it's good to be able to give some good conservation news for once.
Yes, it is. It's wonderful.
A little bit of diving news. Zoo Blue, which is a diving travel related website, they've just launched a new digital library of free scuba diving guides.
It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty awesome. Can't be as good as Deeper Blue's Beginner's Guide to Scuba Diving, may I point out. But
they can try.
They can try. No, I'm kidding. So it's really good. The guides cover best diving destinations across the globe, as well as much loved species, helping divers to choose when and where to take the next trip, no matter what they're interested. So places like the Maldives, Red Sea, Indonesia, Raja Ampat, one of my bucket list destinations. I want to go and dive Raja Ampat.
Oh, I'll go with you. It's on mine too. I've heard that the frogfish are unparalleled and the manta feeding stations are off the hook. So that's pretty cool. And it's just fun to say Zoo Blue.
Absolutely. Now, talking about some scuba travel, Aggressor Adventures, who are a very well-known liveaboard company, do some fantastic liveaboards around the world. They've just acquired a fleet of liveaboard dive yachts in the Red Sea. One of my favorite destinations, obviously near me. And they have acquired the yachts from the Royal Evolution Company. Three dive yachts, which are now under the Red Sea RE Aggressor, is what it's called.
Awesome. So, that's exciting.
I love this. I've done a good number of liveaboards in the Red Sea. And you can do all sorts of different itineraries. Yeah, North Red Sea, you know, Sinai, you can do Southern Red Sea, you can do all sorts of things. And it's always this absolutely stunning, stunning diving out there. So more options to go diving and do liveaboards. I, again, am all for it. You ever done a liveaboard, Lyndon?
I've done liveaboards, but I've never been to the Red Sea. So, I mean,
what?
My gosh,
that is,
I know.
That's disgraceful. We should get our listeners to write a strongly worded petition in to do this and get this fixed, I think.
Well, there's a crew over there called the Mermaid Alliance, and I have an open invitation to go and mermaid and swim with them, and it's very exciting. So their videos are tremendous, and they have a really cool mermaid training program that they're doing, and they're using the Mermaid Linden monofins. So I get all these beautiful videos and see all the things that they're doing.
We need to convert you being the roving poop reporter for Deeper Blue to the roving mermaid reporter. And, you know, spoiler alert for everyone listening, by the way, there's no poop stories in this episode, which I know you'll all be disappointed about. But
there are no fecal matters.
There's no fecal matters today. Yeah. But yeah, definitely. Let's when we can travel a bit more, we should get you over and you can go and do a bit of roving reporting from the Red Sea.
Oh, I'd love to. I would be stoked. So send me over.
So next story about the ocean floor.
Yeah. And I cannot drive to the Red Sea, but if I could somehow drive over water and I chose to do it in an electric car, it seems that the ocean possesses very specific metals and minerals in its ocean rocks that our cars may be used in the future, or the batteries and components of cars may be using these rocks from the ocean floor to be created. And scientists are in cahoots over if this is good or not.
Mm. You know, what a lot of people don't realize is these fantastic devices that allow us not only to talk to each other over the airwaves, but also look up excellent websites like Deeper Blue, download apps like the Deeper Blue app. So our mobile phones and batteries in particular are made of a lot of rare metals, things like copper, nickel, manganese, cobalt, and so on. And in particular, as we scaled up and put these really big batteries in cars like Teslas, and they require vast amounts of these, you know, very rare minerals. So they're looking for where they can find additional ones. So great, they found them on the ocean floor. The difficulty is then, you know, obviously mining operations have to start. And this is where, you know, mining is typically pretty destructive. So this is where scientists are a little bit concerned about, great, we found these deposits, potentially bad because mining companies generally don't give a damn about what they're doing.
The habitat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing. And so in this article, there is a visualization of the deep sea mining, and you can see this video that they have created, sort of a simulation of what that looks like. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology Mechanical Engineering created this, and it doesn't look delicate or gentle. I'm not gonna lie.
No, not at all. It looks like it's strip mining the bottom of the ocean, but we'll see. You know, it's an important thing. So we're gonna need to balance being able to provide some of the modern stuff that we have, and also we need to look at recycling these minerals from existing, rather than just throwing your phone away, can be recycled, those sorts of things. Well, maybe we need someone like Thor to come along from the Marvel universe and use his big, whatever the hammer's called, to get lightning down from the sky to, you know, recharge the batteries.
Between Thor and Poseidon, we've got this.
Absolutely. Well, talking of Hollywood, I mean, this probably won't come as a shock, especially to those like you and me, Lyndon, that are very passionate and involved in diving conservation in the ocean and so on. There's been a study that's analysed 109 shark-related films from Hollywood since 1958 to 2019 and has found that in 96% of them, sharks have been overtly portrayed, I point out, as potentially threatening to humans. Which isn't surprising, right? We see lots of films, you know, everything from the fantastic Sharknado, everything from Jaws, a seminal 1975 film, all the way up to Sharknado 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, where how many those Sharknado films are. Laser shooting sharks with zombies on the back, I think, was one of them that I saw.
Oh my gosh. There's so many, but it's true. They're always the bad guys, even in The Little Mermaid. But there is one exception. One of these 109 films that was reviewed for this study of Hollywood and its impact on how the public views sharks painted sharks in a positive light. And that film was, drum roll, Stephen.
Finding Dory.
Just keep swimming, 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 sharks. You just keep swimming because Finding Dory makes you look like friendly little creatures.
And that's a kid's movie, right? So fantastic that that's the thing. The co-author of the study says, and completely agree with this, is, you know, this kind of constant negative portrayal of sharks, you know, gets into people's psyche. You know, I think about my mum, for example. She has a very negative view of sharks. And a lot of it's based on what she's heard and read and seen in the media. And she thinks they're big, you know, scary things. And when I told her that a few years ago I was going to Fiji to go and dive with up to 60 sharks in the water at the same time, I actually didn't tell her till I was on the at the airport on the way to the destination what I was going to go and do. So
really?
Mainly because she was get so scared about what I was doing.
I mean, that's a mom's job. I mean, my mother equally was, and she hid it well. And then after the fact, when she knew I was unscathed, was relieved after I had been swimming surrounded by 20 some odd reef sharks without a mask on, holding my breath with a giant fishtail on while they were actively swimming around and thinking there was food. And I've never had anything happen. If I can swim around looking like half of a fish without a mask, everything's blurry. I'm not saying nothing can ever happen, but it's so rare.
You're more likely to die from eating cheese than dying from a shark attack. You're more likely to die from a vending machine falling off.
You took mine. Yes. Vending machine.
I love that. Me too. How many people, but you can imagine you get angry with a vending machine and you rock it backwards and forwards and it falls on top of you, you know, but more people die from sharks. And one of the great things is there's lots of charities and organizations out there that are helping trying to change portrayal of sharks, and our perception of sharks, not just in the media, but just generally in organizations like Bite Back here in the UK.
Shark Allies,
actually Sharks Trust. Well, Shark Allies, Kinga Phillips, one of our former guests on season one. She's involved in Shark Allies. So this is great. You know, these sorts of things is fantastic. And we need to keep supporting organizations that are trying to help change perception of sharks.
We can't forget our friend Topher Chin, Christopher Chin, who has made incredible leaps and bounds through CORE, his organization based out of Northern California. There are so many people in our realm who are making incredible efforts and boots on the ground. You know, the people who are really doing the work. They're not just making a post and saying, save the sharks. They actually go in and speak to decision makers and policy makers about these matters and make the changes.
It's not easy, right? So if we take, you know, CORE, Christopher Chin, he goes in at the legislative part of things and trying to get governments to make significant change. And that's hard. Same for Bite Back. They do public campaigns, they also were instrumental, for example, reported on a month or so ago that the UK has now banned personal imports of shark fin or shark products, not just shark fin, which was a loophole that allowed shark fin products to get into the country. And again, they did that through legislative and political lobbying to do it, which is a very unique skill. It's not just about trying to raise the awareness in the public psyche. It's also about raising it in the political and government circles as well, which is really hard. So hats off to them. They have a hard job and they do it all very well. So hats off to you all. Talking about hats off, something we covered last year, I absolutely love these things, is our friends over at Oceanographic magazine do the 2021 Ocean Photography Awards, which have these absolutely stunning, stunning ocean images. They have announced the finalists for this year's awards. Everything from multicolored squid, translucent deep sea creatures, to rainbow covered waves and split shots of sharks at sunsets. and free diving journeys with humpbacks. I mean, I just want to go diving, just reading about these things and seeing these images.
They're beautiful. Sea wolves, paper nautilus, gosh, the jellyfish in the kelp forest. It really does. It transports you. And when you see these awards given and also just see where these people have gone, and you see it from their perspective, it's such a spectacular thing and a privilege to travel to these places and experience these moments through these photographers' lenses.
By the time this episode comes out, because spoiler alerts again to listeners, we don't record this live in real time before it goes out. There's actually a series of films being released on the Ocean Photography Awards Instagram page from September 10 to September 16th. So this episode comes out on the 14th. Go to their Instagram page. You can go and see all the winners being announced. And if you happen to be in London, obviously come and say hello to me, give me a wave. But there is a free outdoor public exhibition alongside the River Thames is scheduled for September 17th to October 17th on Queen's Walk near Tower Bridge.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Sounds lovely. So I shall go and have a look at that.
Will you please do an Instagram live on the Deeper Blue Gram so we can watch and see?
Sure. Why
that
not?
Would be
let's,
cool.
Let's do that. That sounds like a good idea. Last but no means least, and this is definitely one for Jason, but there's always going to be one sort of tabloid type story just for Jason, just to make sure he feels happy.
But I feel like this is less tabloid and more just real estate news.
It is, but it's on Fox 13. So there is a private island up for sale in Scotland, Bonnie, Scotland,
Bonnie, Scotland.
It is going for around about $70,000.
The Isle of Carmen Diaz.
Carmen Diaz. The Isle of Carmen Diaz. Is that the sea?
Well, it's a 22.5-acre island. It's off the western coast of Scotland within the Summer Isles. It's an archipelago that sits on the mouth of Loch Broom. So it's uninhabited. It's beautiful. I mean, it looks gorgeous. I don't know how you get power out there. I guess you do some solar, but it's stunning.
And also the wildlife around here. So, I mean, you can do a lot of, you know, sailing, you can do scuba diving, fishing sort of thing. Interestingly, around the area, you know, things like porpoises, dolphins, whales, basking sharks, and otters all prevalent there, which is fantastic. Well,
but most importantly, Stephen, Goldcrest describes the small island as being, quote, rugged and romantic as an investment opportunity. So there is that. If you want to be rugged and romantic in
Scotland,
Scotland,
thought they were describing me for a second. Rugged and romantic. You're a perfect investment opportunity. That sounds like me, isn't it?
And it's only a 25-minute boat ride away from the, here, I'm going to butcher this one too, Baden Tarbet
Pier or Old Dorney Harbour.
That's easier to say.
In Northern Scotland.
Yes.
Interesting.
It looks beautiful.
Maybe we can do the next co-host get together for the podcast. We can do a whip round and see if we can rustle up some cash to buy this. Because obviously there's a lot of money in podcasting.
Podcasting.
Maybe we don't buy the super yacht and we go for the small islands instead. Does that sound good?
Yeah. I'll be right over.
Well, Lyndon, that is the news of the week.
The final news
for series three, season three, should I say. Mm-hmm. I will say, as I always do, you know, for all the diving, ocean and travel related news, deeperblue.com. By all means, go and do that. Download our app as well. And season three, whilst it is the end of this 10-episode run, we'll take a short break and then we'll be back with season four. And I must give a huge thank you to obviously Jason, producer, Lyndon, you and Megan as co-hosts. Absolutely fantastic. All our guests for season three.
Yes. All of our amazing guests.
But also a big, huge thank you to Suunto for being sponsors of this season. And they're very kindly back to be sponsors of next season as well. So they will see out the year with our friends over at Suunto. So by all means, please go and take a look at suunto.com. That's it for the news this week. So, Lyndon, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much. It's, as always, been a pleasure. Everyone, have fun out there. Be safe and get in the water.
With that, on with the rest of the show.
Toodles.
Hello, I'm Betty Scuba, the Dive Nanny, and you're listening to the best 30 minutes about diving, the Deeper Blue Podcast.
Today, co-host Lynn Wolpert speaks with Women's Hall of Fame diver Sylvia Goh, scuba diver, stuntwoman, and photojournalist.
I am interviewing the beautiful, talented, and effervescent Sylvia Goh. Sylvia, thank you so much for being here with us today on the Deeper Blue podcast.
My pleasure. I'm so excited.
I'm so curious to know, as a woman who has transcended so many obstacles in your life through your work, through your health, with your family, in so many ways, you're a very intelligent, dynamic, multilingual woman. How did you end up becoming so connected to the oceans?
It is a very interesting question, especially that I grew up in a landlocked country in Hungary. I started doing a sport called orienteering diving, which is kind of like a treasure hunt where you have to find different objects underwater using a timing device and a compass. Really, the military sponsored it because they wanted people to find things in zero visibility waters. And I did that when I was a kid, since I was 13, and I had about 500 dives until I actually ventured to see the ocean in Greece with my team. I grew up in a country that was ex-communist, so we had to wait until that Iron Curtain fell in 1990 to go to Greece. And when I dove in the ocean and I actually could see, and I could see creatures and turtles and octopus, I just had this realization that I'm going to go and live somewhere where there is no winter, where there are palm trees, sunshine all year round, and I'm going to make a living of scuba diving. You can imagine the skepticism that I received when I declared this at home. And my grandpa said, "Sissy, why don't you just watch the Jacques Cousteau movies? And you don't have to worry about getting bit by sharks and get lost in the ocean." And I looked at my grandpa and I said, "I don't want to live my life through other people's stories. I want to make my own stories. I want to go and swim in the ocean. I want to be with the turtles and the sharks." The more people told me that you can't do this, the more I just said, you know, watch me. So in college, I studied marketing and management, and I went to the Mediterranean Sea, to Malta, where I became a dive master and instructor. And at college, we have to spend the last 6 months working somewhere and write our thesis. So I decided I'm going to write my thesis, how to write financial planning for seasonable markets, such as scuba diving. So basically, I used college and I played by their rules. I went to spend 6 months to become a dive master and instructor as an internship because I had no money. I just walked into a dive shop and said, "Can I please work off the price of this training? I'm going to be free labor for you." There was this female dive resort owner who looked at me and said, "I've never done this, but sure." And from there, it's rest is history. I traveled the world. I lived in Thailand, went to Australia. I came to California for 2 weeks, 20 years ago. And I became a course director in California.
And how did you get involved in the film industry? I know you do a lot of underwater stunt work and all kinds of safety diving and many things on big films and television shows.
I believe in fate, and I was in the right place at the right time. I know certain types of diving that not too many women can do who is my size and can double actresses. For example, ice diving, I doubled Drew Barrymore for the Big Miracle movie when we saved the whales up in Alaska. And luckily, my size is the size of a typical woman actress. So I can do all the wreck diving, cave diving. I did double Dina Meyer for the Piranha movie when I go into the caves and get eaten by piranhas. That was a fun movie to work on for sure. When we were filming that, in movies, they don't always film things in the sequence that it is going to be in the movie. So that actress who end up dying, eaten by piranhas, was a little dummy when we filmed the dead scene. They didn't have a scuba gear on. So when it was my turn to do my scene, not only did I get to be torn by piranhas in a cave, I also had to take off all my scuba gear and throw it away in a pitch dark cave. That was just one of the craziest things I've ever had to do.
I hope they paid you well. So Sylvia, your career has spanned so many different facets, from creating beautiful ocean-inspired jewelry with gemstones to overcoming breast cancer like a boss. You have done so many things and been an inspiration to so many. You're in the Women Divers Hall of Fame. You are a Patty Ambassador Diver. What I'd love to know about is a dive that you have gone on that had a really profound impact on you. Take us underwater with you.
This is not going to be one of your usual dives for what I find, to me, super empowering. You know, I've been from Antarctica to South Africa to Thailand to the Red Sea in Sudan. I mean, I dove the seven seas. But the one dive that I really look forward to every year is what I do with At-Risk Youth, the A Chance for Children Foundation. I work with inner city kids down here in Los Angeles who literally live 20 minutes from the ocean and have never been there. They don't even have bathing suits. And once a year, I gather all my water-loving friends, instructors, dive masters, or anyone who just loves diving. And we take 30 to 50 of these inner city kids underwater. These kids are terrified of the water, yet want to do something super exciting. So when we have them come into the water, you see this excitement and fear mixed in their eyes while I'm explaining what we're going to do, how we're going to breathe underwater, the signals we're going to use. And I have this community of scuba diver friends who have put fins on these kids, comfort them, show them how to fit those masks on their face. And then we work with them one-on-one. We take them underwater and swim. And then they always, within like 3 seconds, do that up signal to let's go up. And then we take them up right away. And they just see that we listen to them, pay attention to what they want to do. And then they go back with the biggest smile on their face. And this changes their lives. I hope in a way where it impacts them to believe that they can make a living of something that they are passionate about. We do career days and I go talk with these kids and sometimes I see them year after year. And I see that it makes a difference to give back to the community. So to me, it might not be your most exciting dive, but that's one that I look forward to every year.
You're listening to the world's only weekly podcast for scuba diving, free diving, dive travel, and ocean advocacy. I'm Dawn Kernagas, dive medicine researcher and NEMO 21 aquanaut. And this is the Deeper Blue Podcast.
And action.
Hey, everyone. So the Deeper Blue Podcast is brought to you by Suunto, the dive watch and dive computer manufacturer.
Suunto.
Suunto has an app. Suunto has an app which logs your dives and other activities with Bluetooth connection to D5, I don't know what that is, Eon Core, don't know what that is, and Eon Steel. Are those three of their dive computers?
It is three of their dive computers. And I know that, as we've mentioned before on the podcast, you're a bit of a novice when it comes to this stuff. Yes. You're a bit of flotsam in the water when it comes to...
I'm not going to log on the surface of the ocean that gets thrown around by the waves. Mm. But I love it. I love it.
Yeah, so the D5 is one of their wrist... Well, in fact, all three of them, the Eon Core, Eon Steel, and D5 are all wrist dive computers from Suunto. Mm-hmm, and one looks like a watch, which is a D5, and the other two look like little square rectangular computers on your wrist.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I think the thing I like about this, so it says here, the copy says it allows you to use a map to post and then share and show off. And so here's the deal. Here's something that I'm going to say that is sacrilegious, at least for scuba divers. For the free divers out there, I don't know what they do because you're a free diver. I'm not. I don't log any of my dives ever. I've never been, I'm a big picture guy, so I don't care about the details. And people, I know this is sacrilege to say this.
I know that's true from doing this podcast with you for a while, Jason. You're a big picture guy. Someone has to do the details though.
Someone does have to do the details. So I don't log any of my dives. I basically just remember what I just did. I mean, I've done hundreds of dives, but I still just, I just kind of experience it. So the fact that this thing can actually log all the dives for me, put them on a map around the world, that's pretty cool. I do like that.
You know, there's a little bit of a narcissist in all of us, right? So we all like to see what goes on around the world, you know, what are we doing and stuff. And look, it's the modern day thing. You know, we've got apps that track us doing everything, whether we want to or not. And I think, you know, I love being able to, you know, show off where I've gone diving. I don't really log dives anymore. I've done God knows how many now, 1,500, 2,000, something like that over my career. So when I log a dive, I want to do it because I want to show off. So it's really cool in the Cinto app. You know, you go and log it, look, connects to your computer, downloads everything, puts some extra information in. You can do it on the app or you can do it on the website. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, that I do like that. I don't know. I honestly still am confused why I need to have logs of my dives, because what do I need to like show people for? I mean, other than show off on Facebook, but I don't go there anymore.
It's because we don't trust you. So how do we know you've gone diving if you haven't looked at it?
As a piece of flotsam on the surface of the ocean, you actually would be right to question if I've actually done all of those dives. Okay, so the Cinto app. That's pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah, very, very cool. Go and check it out, guys.
Cinto.
Hey, everyone. This is Megan Haney-Greer. Coming up now is a top tip, or maybe more like a mission, from the executive director and co-founder of Force Blue, Jim Ritterhoff, on why the days of being a recreational diver are a thing of the past.
You know, it's funny. I gave this talk at DEMA, and it was about, you know, recreational diving, in my mind, is over. I get, you know, folks at NAWI and Patty get mad at me when I say that, but I don't mean it like, don't be a recreational diver. My point is, if you have the ability and you have the blessing, honestly, to be a diver, if you have that opportunity, you have the responsibility now to be a part of this fight. Every time you jump in the water, think about what can you be doing, whether it's from a citizen science perspective or it's just learning to help educate others. How can you be moving the ball forward? How can you be part of the process that turns us around? Congratulations, you're a scuba diver. Now get to work. You know what I mean? That's kind of my tip anyway.
Finally, in every episode, we share a story from you, the dive community, where we ask you to tell us about your best dive ever.
My name is Steve Weaver, owner of Weaver's Dive and Travel Center and Dreamweaver Travel, located in Boulder, Colorado. My best dive ever, I think, was in the Solomon Islands on a trip aboard the Bill Kiki. We did a dive site called the Devil's Highway, which was described as having several manta rays on the dive. The dive masters on the boat did a great job prepping us for the dive, telling us there would be a lot of current at the beginning of the dive, and the manta rays were a 50-50 shot of being able to see them. We jumped in the water, the current was rip-roaring, and we just flew with it, and it was a lot of fun. And then there's this little ledge that dropped off to about 100 feet. As we went over, everybody sort of grabbed onto the lip of the ledge and hung on for dear life, and the current was just ripping. And at one point, I considered aborting the dive, but then all of a sudden, it happened. The manta rays came, about 20 of them, and they stayed with us for the rest of the dive. It was mesmerizing. Best dive ever.
We'd love to hear about your best dive. So please head over to deeperblue.com/bestdiveever to share your story about your best dive ever.
Thanks for listening to the Deeper Blue podcast. Find out more about all the stories you've heard today, plus connect with the world's largest dive community at deeperblue.com. If you like what you've heard, please share, like, and rate our show wherever you get your podcasts. These shares and likes really do make a difference. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week. MHG out.